Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. Coming up in about 25 minutes or so, we had a chance to catch up with James Palmer of Bleacher Report. We'll play the best of that for you coming up in just a little bit. There is a lot to get into in the show. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this because I generally feel... This is why I tell you guys all the time, PR is really, really easy. The public gets tired of stories really quickly, and this news line moves really quickly. So people already 2-3 days into their left tackle just not being on the team right now, move on. You're beating a dead horse. Like, all you got to do is just wait 2-3 days, and you can beat anything in today's society if you just wait a couple of days because the news cycle moves so fast. So I want to play this for you. I don't want to spend the whole 5 o'clock hour talking about Josh Simmons because I don't still know what's happening with Josh Simmons. I today have been told 4 different things privately about what's going on with Josh Simmons. I have absolutely no clue what it is. I do think that the Chiefs have contributed in some ways to there being a cloud of mystery about it. The one thing I'll say related to Josh Simmons is related to the cut that we played earlier today from Nate Taylor. Here's the cut on what he is hearing. It is.
I do believe it's a family matter. I do believe, Josh Simmons is back in like the Southern California, San Diego area, which is, you know, his hometown. I had the responsibility yesterday not to ask Andy Reid because I've done that already, but to really ask Patrick Mahomes, like, hey, man, have you talked to this guy? Patrick was very honest on Sunday saying he didn't know where Josh was and that, you know, it's not every day the starting quarterback has to go to the coaching staff and say, where's the left tackle? And the coaching staff really doesn't have the best answer for your franchise quarterback. So when Patrick Mahomes said yesterday that he's praying for Josh Simmons, I think we all need to take that cue from the quarterback. And, you know, I'm fearful, I guess, is probably the best way I can explain what I've heard.
This is what I would have done from the very beginning if I was Josh Simmons' agent. If I was Josh Simmons' agent, and there was a tweet that went out that said that the Chiefs and my client were not on the same page about his absence, part of your job is to handle this and the public relations side of things. I think a lot of this could just be simply ended if Drew Rosenhaus released a statement regarding his client. But I think the fact that all sides have been so secretive and close to the vest of this has just led to speculation, which just creates uncertainty about the situation. Drew Rosenhaus has been in far stickier situations than this before. He reps Tyreek Hill. He repped Antonio Brown. Think of any prominent player that has come out of the Miami, Florida area. Drew Rosenhaus has had a hand in managing that client. So he has dealt with something like this before. I don't know what Josh Simmons is. I don't know what's happening right now. But a very simple statement from Drew Rosenhaus could put out the fire to this thing. Hey, our client right now is dealing with a personal matter, and when he feels ready to speak, he will talk on this and move forward. They should have put this out on Monday morning when it comes to this. Yeah, here we are, the Thursday before the game, and he left on Sunday. He didn't practice on Wednesday. He didn't practice on Thursday. And there is still, at least publicly, no understanding of when he is going to come back to the team. You guys keep wondering, why does this matter? I think it matters because I think if you had a draft right now and you were talking about who are the most important players for the Chiefs moving forward, I think he's the second most important player on the team behind Patrick Mahomes. He's your left tackle. A lot of you think that he can be the franchise left tackle for a decade. He just left on the Sunday before a game, and there's no certainty on when that player is coming back. There's no other situation like that currently in the National Football League. So I think some of it is, while the Chiefs, everything appears to be finally turning their way. They didn't have Rashee Rice. You had some injuries when it comes to this thing. Like, there have been things that have kind of pulled away at the Chiefs over the first 6-7 weeks of the season. Now that you're expecting, man, we're ready to go now. We're going to have our offense on full throttle. Their left tackle right now, there's a lot of uncertainty on where he is. So that's one of the reasons why I think this story is carrying the way that it is.
I also think, and maybe we're saying the same thing, it's just semantics. I think one of the reasons this story is carrying is because it doesn't seem like the Chiefs have given a clear and concise message, and a lot of the questions people like me and you and Nate and even fans have not been answered. He being Andy Reid, was asked point blank in his Monday Zoom press conference. So he's had 24 hours after the game, after the situation. He knew he was meeting with the media at noon on Monday. He had 24 hours to formulate a message. He knew he was going to be asked about Josh Simmons. Nate Taylor, who's been very good on this, asked very simply, do you have a timetable on when you believe Josh will get back? And he kind of non-answered him. Then 48 hours go by. Now Andy Reid's meeting with the media again on Wednesday around 11:45. I know that question's coming. You know that question's coming. Everyone in the media room knows that question is coming. Andy Reid knows that question is coming. Andy Reid says he has no further comment on the situation and, quote, Brett Veach is handling it. So not only have you not answered our question, you have only answered with doing things that create more questions. If Andy Reid on Monday and the PR department, if someone had given Andy Reid a statement on Monday that said he's dealing with a personal matter or a family matter or what have you, and he is going to be out for a little bit, we don't have a clear timeline, we're working with him and the league, we're considering all options with Veach and all these things, but we're going to give him his privacy in this moment. If Andy Reid said that on Monday at noon, do you know what we're not talking about today? Josh Simmons. But instead, they non-answered, then they said it's Veach, then they kind of non-answered again, they've kind of hemmed and hawed. You know, it was personal reasons, but we're not going to get into it. It just, if they had just done this right on Monday, we would not be talking about it on Thursday.
I don't want to say that they've done it wrong. I don't know if that's fair. Like,
I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I think they haven't done it perfect, and that has created more skepticism.
I think they've left a blank, and I think it then allows you to fill in the blank on what you possibly think it could be. Like right here on the text line, someone sends in, C-Dot, maybe the player doesn't want people to know. That's why I think a lot of times, and it happens in sports all the time, you can just use such a blanket term and people accept it and we never dive deeper into it. For example, we use the term distraction. Distraction in the National Football League can mean 15 different things. Distraction could mean that you are a legitimate abuser. Distraction could mean that you drove drunk. Distraction could mean that you had two blunts in the car. We agree. Those are wide variances of what could possibly be. But we all know when you hear the term distraction, oh, that's serious. That's why Amin doesn't want the player to know. Family issue. Family issue also could mean a million different things. Think about in your own life and the issues that you have with your family. Some are very, very small issues. Some are very serious issues. But everybody understands and everybody respects, I am dealing with a personal family issue. Everybody respects that. And that's why I'm saying is, I guess to your point about what you just said, on Wednesday, when they stood in front of the media and they spoke about this, I don't know why they didn't just say that from the very beginning. That's it. I don't know why they didn't say that from the very, very beginning. Another thing, though, we were talking about this earlier as well. Someone said, see, like I said yesterday, I don't need to know. It's his business. I would argue when it comes to professional athletes, we talk about their business all the time. I would say we love to be in their business. We love to talk about their contract. We love to talk about when they should get a new contract. We love to talk about when they should restructure their contract. Like, we talk about their business all of the time. So that's why I think it's created just a general, you are inquisitive. You want to know what's happening, what's going on. Why is he not there? Why is he not at work? I think that's what kind of creates the uncertainty around this. But I think we're going to hear tomorrow. I mean, there's going to be another time. I mean, Andy Reid is going to be asked about this tomorrow.
No chance he answers.
I agree with you.
On Fast Friday, no chance.
100%. But we agree. The first question to ask, the Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow when Andy Reid talks to the media is, where is Josh Simmons? When do you anticipate him coming back? Now, he can continue to give you the same answer, but your left tackle has not been here and has not been in practice. That needs to be the first question that's asked him tomorrow at 1 o'clock. He might give you the exact same answer. Maybe we get more information, but he will absolutely be asked again tomorrow, where is he? Why is he not here? I think that's going to happen tomorrow. All right, let's talk about the actual game that they have on Sunday coming up against the Las Vegas Raiders.
Your workday is over.
Oh, yeah.
You're headed home, and now you're stuck in traffic. Time to get caught up on the biggest stories in Kansas City and around the country with CDOT and Rob. It's time for the hits.
I just want to read this text to you really quickly. Someone on the text line says, CDOT, I think it's different. You're describing a player's availability. That is our business. This is his business. This affects his availability. He's not there. I can't think of more I can't think of availability more than you left work and are not reporting to work. This absolutely affects his ability. He missed the game and is about to miss another game. What are we talking about? This absolutely affects his ability. This is like having an injury. You can't play in the game. We would know if somebody didn't play, we would want to know why you were injured. Hey, why didn't you play? Oh, I tweaked my hamstring. This absolutely affects his ability. He's not at work today.
Just a reminder, the hits are brought to you by Baker University, where this weekend on October 18th and 19th, more than 30,000 visitors will gather under Baldwin City's brilliant maple trees for Maple Leaf Fest. Enjoy family fun, food, and music as art as we celebrate 65 years of Kansas tradition. More details at bakeru.edu/Maple Leaf. Carrington, let's talk about... I don't want to talk about the Raiders. The Raiders stink. Who cares about the Raiders? But let's talk about...
But this is the thing, though. See, this is the thing. And you can turn the music down, though. I'm not doing that with any team in the National Football League. I'm not doing that right now.
Any team.
Well, okay. I'm not doing that with any team that's not the Jets and the Saints. Like, okay. I think the Jets and the Saints are terrible organizations. I think they're bad football teams that can't get going. But I don't know how we can watch football in 2025 and then laugh off the notion that any team can beat any other team. I just don't know how you can be watching these games this week. We saw in a four-day span, we saw the Giants lose to the Saints by double digits and then turn around and pummel the Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday Night Football. Now, I'm not telling you that I'm picking the Raiders to win this game. No, you'd be silly to pick the Raiders to win this game. But it's 2025. It is a divisional game, and the gap between the first team and the 23rd team is not nearly as big as we talk about. So, I'm at least going to treat the Raiders with proper respect. Now, Geno, he has been a turnover machine. I think that rears its ugly head. But, I mean, you got a running back that we all know and thought very highly of when he was coming out of school. You got Trey Tucker. You got a couple of things. Again, it's a divisional game. Weird things just happen. Like, we've seen plenty of Chiefs games in our life, plenty of Chiefs games during the Mahomes era where the Chiefs just sleepwalk for the first three quarters of the game, and the game ends up being weirdly close in the fourth quarter in a way that we don't really respect. Like, that's happened a bunch of times before. So I want to be clear. I'm not picking the Raiders to win this game. I'm simply saying I'm not laughing off the Las Vegas Raiders because I don't know if in 20 really laugh off a whole lot of teams in the National Football League. I'm not laughing off really anybody right now in the league because everything is just weird right now. All the results are weird. I don't know who's really good. I don't know who's really separated themselves. I don't know where the great teams are and where the bad teams begin. So I'm going to treat the Raiders with respect.
Here's why I won't, and we can get to my question about the Chiefs here in a minute. I think the Raiders are way closer to the Jets than people want to admit. I don't know if they're all the way Jets bad, because that is, I mean, Aaron Glenn. I thought you'd be a good hire. Like, it's really bad over there. It just, I don't know if the organization's cursed. I don't know. But I think the Raiders are far closer to that realm than anything else. Like, they got their one win on opening day against the Patriots. Great for the Raiders. All those things. They ruined Mike Vrabel's homecoming, yada, yada, yada. Since then, they've done nothing. They look very Saints-ish. They look very Jets-ish. I think they are in that pantheon of their front office, Tom Brady and everyone, are having discussions about the draft. I think they're better than the Jets, but I don't think they're any given Sunday, let's just see what happens, you never know type of energy. I think they are a doormat in the NFL, and just time over time, we will say they are a doormat in the NFL.
I don't disagree with you. Again, I'm not here to argue that I think that they are a good football team, because I don't think they're a good football team. I really don't. But I would say you and I both think the Patriots are a pretty decent football team. The Raiders went on the road and beat the New England Patriots. Now, I'm not saying the Chiefs are the Patriots. I'm just saying it's 2025, and weird things have been happening this entire season. So if you are slipping up and you are looking ahead to the Commanders or looking ahead to the game against the Buffalo Bills or the bye week or any of those things, just about anybody right now in this league is showing you they are capable of biting you and just making the game uncomfortable. So I would respect any team that you are playing right now, especially a team in your division. It was not that long ago that we all loved the Green Bay Packers, and the Packers went on the road and lost to the Cleveland Browns. A Browns team that you and I both agree is a terrible football team. A Browns team that's going to be picking in the top five and fire their quarterback 2 days later after that. So that's all I'm saying when it comes to the Raiders. I'm going to show the Raiders a little bit of respect. I do think this is important about the Raiders, though. That Raiders game on Christmas Day, what is it, like a year and a half ago now? At this point, almost 2 years ago now, was really a turning point for the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs were 9-5. And I'm guessing if we go back in time and we find what we said about this game, man, no chance in December that the Raiders come into it with Taylor Swift and Christmas Day and the Chiefs in December. And there's no way that you think the Raiders come in there and beat the Chiefs. And they didn't win on something fluky. They dominated the Chiefs for 60 minutes. Since that day, we have seen a very different version of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs were 9-5 heading into that game. They left 9-6. They have lost six games exactly since that game. They're 20-6. They've won a Super Bowl and appeared in another one since then. So we saw a Chiefs team that, I don't want to say they were average. Obviously, a 9-5, they're not that. But we had questions on whether or not that team was special. And if that team had the ability to put everything together to go win another Super Bowl, they did. They won 15 games the next season. And right now, you and I both think, at least I have them as the second best team in the National Football League. You have them as a top 10 team in the National Football League, but certainly a team that is trending in the right direction, offensively and defensively. So that Raiders game, if we are going through and at the end of Patrick Mahomes' career, we're reading a book. And this book will tell you big moments and big turning points in his career. The Christmas Day loss against the Raiders needs to be in that book. It is one of the most important games in Chiefs history. It doesn't feel like it because they lost, and it's a regular season loss at the end of the season, but something sparked in the Chiefs that allowed them to go undefeated the rest of the way and then win 15 regular season games the next season. The Chiefs, after that loss, they probably won. If you go back and look, they won, what, 25 of 26 games after losing that Raiders game? They became a completely different organization after that.
I had the stat earlier. Since the loss to the Raiders on Christmas Day, where at this point, you've said it perfectly, it's an iconic photo. I don't know if it's infamous or famous, of Taylor Swift and Patrick Mahomes' wife, Brittany, in embrace in the box because their team has just lost and they're both in Christmas hats. And like, it's a very, they're clearly distraught about the team's loss. Since that loss, the Chiefs are 20-5 in the regular season. They are 26-6 if you include the postseason, yeah, with a Super Bowl title and multiple AFC titles. Like, they were 9-5 going into that game. They've lost five regular season games since then. Five. That game happened in December of 2023. It is now October of 2025. That is the ultimate fork in the road. They took the path correctly moments in Chiefs history.
Number two.
Speaking of the Chiefs, Carrington, you were asked a fascinating question by a friend of the show. Pony's friend of the show, right? I mean,
he absolutely is friend of the show. That's my guy.
The timelines, we don't get him on as much as we probably could other Pittsburgh people, but that's not here nor there.
Yeah. I love Pony, though.
Pony asked you a very interesting question. Looking back at the Chiefs' Sunday night football win over the Detroit Lions, what was the more important thing to notice? Was it the Chiefs putting 30 up on the board and that offense looking back to all systems go? Or was it the Chiefs' defense and how they slowed down one of the more dynamic offenses in the NFL with the Detroit Lions?
I'm going to go with the offense. I certainly could see the other side of the argument. This is what I'm going to say. I am encouraged by the fact of, I think every portion of their team on offense is better now than it was a month ago. Now, we can remove Mahomes from this because I think he's the best quarterback in the National Football League, and he has certainly played like that over the last month to the tune of he is now the MVP favorite in Vegas. Their running back room is more productive. I still don't think they're great at running back, and I certainly still want them to make a trade at the position, but their running back situation is improved from where it was a month ago. It's certainly better. Their wide receiver situation is, I would say, it has improved more than any team has improved a group on their team in such a short period of time. This was maybe the worst wide receiver room in the National Football League in weeks one and week two. You get back Xavier Worthy. You now get back Rashee Rice. You have developed Tyquan Thornton. You feel really, really good about their wide receiver room. Travis Kelce has played very well, and I would say since that week three, him and Andy Reid screaming match or whatever you want to call it, Travis Kelce has played well, kept his head down, been a great teammate, and has been one of the five best tight ends in the National Football League. And their offensive line, Josh Simmons, Jalen Moore, hasn't really mattered. Their offensive line is playing up to expectations. Rob, you remember me saying this earlier in the year. I was holding the Chiefs' offensive line to a different standard because of the amount of resources that they've spent. So right now, they either spent a first-round pick on a left tackle or they spent $21 million guaranteed on a left tackle. Right now, Jalen Moore is getting that start. Kingsley Suamata'i, a second-round pick, he's developing and really starting to come into his own. You got Creed Humphrey. You think Creed Humphrey can be a Ring of Honor guy. Trey Smith can be a Ring of Honor guy at some point. Jawan Taylor. Jawan Taylor has removed the penalties and has been really, really good. Like, maybe the Chiefs won't pay Jawan Taylor next offseason. Somebody is going to give Jawan Taylor a lot of money next season. I don't know who it's going to be, but the Jawan Taylor that's currently playing for the Kansas City Chiefs, he is going to get a big contract elsewhere. He's been a healthy, productive player, and when he removes the penalties, he's a very, very capable offensive lineman, and there's not a whole lot of those in the league. You guys watch the league, and I see teams give up points all the time. I'm watching a Chiefs offense right now that has the ability to knock somebody out. Chiefs offense didn't have that ability. That's a major reason why they played so many close games last year, and we all knew it. I think we were somewhat blinded by the fact that they won basically all of those 50-50 games, but the reason they were in so many 50-50 games is because their offense, we saw this happen plenty of times last year. The Chiefs would be up 7 points. The Chiefs defense would force a stop. The opposition would then punt the ball back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs get the ball at the 30-yard line. All right, here's the drive where you go sweep the leg. I'm talking about fatality. I'm talking about uppercut into the spikes, go in this game. And the Chiefs would go 3 and out or some nonsense would happen. And now the game ends up being a lot closer than it needs to be. I've seen them in 2 of the last 3 weeks, I've seen them knock a team out. They knocked out the Baltimore Ravens and they knocked out the Detroit Lions, a team in which you think their offense usually can score 30, 35, 40 points or so. And they did that to them. So I'm going to give it to their offense. Their defense has been good for the last two and a half seasons. Their offense has been inconsistent. If we're talking about this being a potential top five offense and top five defense, this might be the most complete Chiefs team we've seen since 2021 when they lost to the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl.
So me and you just see it differently. I know we're up against a break here, so I'll go quick. I always felt like the offense was going to get going. I know they were kind of stuck in the mud the first 3 weeks, but they have Patrick Mahomes, they have Andy Reid, and they have enough talent where their offense should not be a slog. I always felt like something was going to happen. The defense against the Jags, especially that last drive, looked bad. Like, they let Trevor Lawrence on the ground pop up and score a game-winning touchdown. They had their defense's best player and their defense in general's effort questioned. They had 13 penalties, and a lot of those were on defense. Like, it was a problem in the Jags game, which I know was, it feels like forever ago, was like 15 days ago. The Chiefs lost that game. They then bounced back and played, made the best offense in the NFL. And in the last six possessions for the Lions, they get up 7 total points. That is a massive win for the defense. And suddenly you have an offense and defense that are clicking on all cylinders.
Coming up on the other side, earlier today, we were joined by James Palmer of Bleacher Report. We'll play the best of that conversation for you guys coming up next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 965 The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you guys. So we asked James Palmer the question that Rob just asked me. What was more impressive? Was it the offense or the defense on Sunday Night Football? Here's what he said.
I think it's by the defense, in all honesty, because that's where we have more question marks. And we've seen the way this offense has now worked with Xavier Worthy, which is what they wanted to do right from the start. But obviously the injury happens, and since he returned, they got, what, 30, 28, and 27 points. So that we've seen that, and we know what the secondary of the Lions was. But this was a Lions offense that we knew coming in. It was when they took the opening toss and said, hey, we want the ball. It was, okay, we want to run the football against a team that has struggled to stop the run. We had the two-headed monster, you know, with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And they had a great opening drive, and they did some good things early. But the defense buckled down, man, and really played well against a Lions offense that had everybody. And so, to me, I have question marks on the defensive side of the ball, and I think playing the Lions the way they played them, I think that was a really good performance to me, as this defense, I think, is going to grow as the season goes on, and I'm not saying anything that nobody's ever seen before with the Spags defense, but I do think this group is going to grow. They have some younger guys up front that they're going to need to have, you know, really go by leaps and bounds as this year goes on and be playing different football by December, but I think this was a really good step early on for that defense.
I argued the offense because I've seen their offense really improve at almost every single facet of it. Their quarterback is playing very consistent football, but that's always the case. Their running game, I think, has improved over the first 6 weeks of the season. That offensive line has certainly improved as well. You're getting great play from Travis Kelce, who had a very, I would say, weird first three games with the Andy Reid, the helmet throw, all of those things, and a wide receiver room that is really filled in and is now about to get their best wide receiver back. I've been very encouraged by this offense basically since halftime of Sunday Night Football against the Giants.
Yeah, listen, you asked me to pick one of the two. I'd say as an entire unit, I was impressed with the defense considering what they were going against. In terms of a position group that I'm most impressed with, to me, I think it's the offensive line. I think the offensive line coming together, and it's helped the run game. It's helped Patrick operate under center in the run game a little bit more than we've seen in the past. It helps him on the play action. It helps him on the bootlegs. And we know with Rashid coming back, like a lot of these shallow crosses that he's just brilliant at. And it's a feel thing, and he's just so good. And some of those plays take a little bit of time. And I think the offensive line allowing Patrick to be able to have some of these concepts that they want to run now that they're getting all of their pass catchers back, I think allows them to run the offense the way they want. And I think we had some question marks early on, right? We're like, there were thoughts that like Trey Smith wasn't playing up to the level that they know he can play at and the contract that he has. And we all know Creed's outstanding, but then you had another question at the other guard spot. And then, you know, the tackles, you're going, I don't know if this is kind of up and down. It was all starting to kind of come together, even though Josh Sims isn't there in that game Sunday night, you're still seeing this offensive line come together. And I think if that happens, and it looks like it's headed in that direction, I think this offense, with Patrick getting time, has a whole lot of different things that they can do.
Right now, we're talking to James Palmer, going through some of the top storylines right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. You are as plugged into Kansas City as any national reporter is. What are you hearing about Josh Simmons? What is sort of the feel around him as he is currently away from the team?
I'll just say, very few people knew what was going on, to my understanding, prior to Sunday. And then more people started finding out. And when you're hearing very little information coming out of the organization, oftentimes I also let that like kind of play itself out. And I think when you hear Andy say, I'm going to, you know, defer to Brett Veach, and you hear Patrick not really answer questions about him, I think at, you know, you start to just kind of go, well, let's just see what the team says next. Obviously, we're all digging and we're all asking questions. All of us, we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we weren't reporters, but I think there's a respect thing there. But I just think there's just not a lot of information. To be completely frank, there isn't. Until we get some, I think that's where it stands right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think my at least confusion in all of this has just been this. I don't know what it is. I have absolutely no clue, and I've tried to avoid speculation because I just don't think that's fair, and you and I both know somebody clips it or says they heard it on the radio. Like, wait, no, that's not at all what I said. What I'm confused about is this. I just don't know why, if it was a personal reason or a family reason, why either his agent doesn't release a statement or the Chiefs just jointly release a statement. Hey, Josh Simmons is away from the team right now dealing with a family matter. When Josh feels ready to talk about it, he'll give you an update. Like, that seems like something that's very simple that would have basically ended any rumor or people trying to guess what it is. I just don't know why they didn't put this fire out from the very, very beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a question more apt for somebody that studied PR in college and not me. But I agree with you. I think trying to figure out the best way to get as much information out as you're allowed to or willing to or can regarding the situation is oftentimes the approach with a lot of these things. But again, sometimes if you don't hear something, it's you don't have a lot and you as an organization don't want to speculate. So I'm going to kind of let it kind of play out a little bit. Obviously, we're all trying to figure out, you know, within reason and hope everything's okay. But at the same time, I think we just kind of see what the Chiefs do next.
I really want to make this a point in every person that we talk to this week. I think Jalen Moore just deserves a lot of credit. You follow this league. You talk to teams. You talk to players. I mean, I think a lot of players would have asked to just be on the inactive list on Sunday Night Football. He had a kid earlier in the day. You haven't been getting run with the ones. You haven't been practicing with the ones. You maybe were told in free agency one thing, a draft ended up happening, and it changed plans. I think it certainly would have been understandable for him to stay with his family on Sunday, for him to show up, play as well as he's played, keep his head down and do the work. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's been a pro in the face of everything that's happened in the last 6 months.
100%. And I think he went from a good organization to another good organization. I think the time he spent at his previous stop plays a part in this, in the way that they do business, in the way that they run their football operation. And I think it's a credit to him for sure. And I think also it's we should be looking at this going, man, everybody's going, whoa, Brett Veach paid a lot of money here. Well, right now everybody's going around the league, is there anybody way we can get some offensive line help right now? Like, there are teams trying to get some depth. I mean, there's just not a lot of good offensive linemen around. There's teams that are very thin. I mean, you know, the Chargers are playing like their fifth, sixth offensive tackles like right now. And so credit to everyone involved for, you know, maybe having one thought process when the deal was made to pivoting and getting who many believe was maybe the most athletic tackle in the draft at the bottom of the first rounds. And he ends up playing really, really well while he's out there. And that changes things and he wins the job. But I think, you know, he's been around long enough to go, this league changes week to week and anything could happen. And you got to make the most of your opportunities. You're getting a chance to protect Patrick Mahomes. And he did a really, really good job of it. And so now, considering a very unique situation that they're in right now with Josh Simmons, I think Brett Veach is looking pretty smart and he's looking like a pretty good fill-in right now.
I was just going to ask you that this is one of the rare times that I think you could say there's a team that is 3-3 and that you could argue that right now they're the best team in the National Football League. They're also currently have the eighth best record of teams in the AFC and are third in their own division. I don't know if you've ever been able to say that at any point in the National Football League.
I think because right now you're seeing some of these teams at the top that you have legitimate questions. I mean, we could look at the AFC. Like, I think the Colts are playing outstanding football. It's one of the most efficient offenses we see in the league right now. It might be the most efficient offense we see. And I think everybody's going, well, like, that's Daniel Jones, right? Like, they still, even though DJ's playing at a really high level and they're really, really, you know, they're just a great group of skill guys that know what they're doing. And Tyler Warren's been awesome. You still go like, well, that's Daniel Jones. It's not Patrick Mahomes running it. And you see the Bills are having, for the second consecutive year now, like issues attacking teams from the boundary and don't have an outside receiver, and that's really impacting their offense. And the defense has, you know, some injuries they're dealing with. Like, I do think it is true because you also have a track record that's just in your mind. You have Andy Reid. You have Steve Spagnuolo. You have Patrick Mahomes. You still have all these pieces that have made it, you know, so consistent of a winning organization that gets better as seasons go on, you can't just forget that, even though every roster is different with every year and teams change. I get that. But a lot of these other teams have questions. I mean, the Chargers came out like gangbusters. And I mentioned, like, their entire backfield goes down. Most of their offensive line goes down. They lose Khalil Mack. Like, everybody has, I think, a question mark next to them, including the defending Super Bowl champs. I just think that question mark's just a little smaller, and we don't question it as much with Kansas City.
That was James Palmer of Bleacher Report on the show earlier today. If you missed any part of our conversation, be sure to check it out on the podcast page. Coming up, we got Thursday Night Football, and we're a little bit stuck. Are we calling this the Unk Bowl, or are we calling this the Icy Hot Bowl? We'll discuss it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with CDOT right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so Joe Flacco was asked a couple of days ago if he liked the nickname the Icy Hot Bowl. Today we have two quarterbacks who are at least 40 years old going against each other, so people have dubbed this the Icy Hot Bowl. While he was answering the question, one of his teammates came by and said, it's the Unk Bowl. So I guess a two-part question here. The first question is, which one do we like more? Do we like the Icy Hot or the Unk Bowl? And when I was telling this to Rob, Rob said that Joe Flacco can't be Unk. And he said the word Unk is two Americas. Rob, can you explain to us why you feel the term Unk is two Americas?
Now, I'm aware what the term Unk means, so it's not like outside my zeitgeist, but it is not a thing that I believe my America calls older people. We were in the newsroom earlier, and you asked this to Scott Parks, and Scott Parks looked at you like you had seven heads. I don't believe people who are up that age in my America get called Unk. So if you're asking me if it's the Unk Bowl or it's the Icy Hot Bowl, I would lean toward Icy Hot because I don't think it's a common expression in my America.
Okay, so now let me ask you this, and I'm not asking this to be funny. I genuinely don't know. Then what is the term that your America calls an older gentleman? So, for example, Shannon Sharp, he kind of goes by Unk. Mm-hmm. He's in his 50s. You call him Unk. That's kind of become a term of endearment. You know, that term, I would say, it used to be old school. Like when you see like a 45-year-old man, all right, old school, you give him a little bit of dap. Or you might give him the head nod. Now, I don't think your America is doing the head nod, at least not up. You might do the head nod down. You're not doing the head nod up. So I'm asking, when you see a wise 48-year-old man, if you're not calling him Unk or OG or old school, what are you calling the older gentleman in your life?
I don't know we have a term for it. I don't know we have a shorthand. I don't know we say Unk or I don't know we have
don't say OG because that's a lot of people say that too. Like, that might be the term that you would consider somebody to be your mentor. Mm-hmm. I would say, yo, that's my OG.
Yeah, I don't know there is a one-for-one equivalent.
A lot of people on the text line are saying old head. That's a term that you would call somebody. That's your old head.
I've heard old head. I've heard it used as an insult and a compliment, though. It's worked both ways.
See, I would say here, somebody said white people would say boomer. Like, I don't think you're calling, like, let's say.
Boomer is an insult, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. But I'm saying is, like, let's say in this scenario, right? I think a lot of people have been in this scenario. You work in the service industry. And we all know in the service industry, people can be wide ranges. There can be the 25-year-old waitress and there can be the 51-year-old cook in the back. The 25-year-old in my America might call the 51-year-old, hey, what's up, Unk? What's up, OG? You might say that.
By the way, the text line has sir. And the answer is sir. We use a lot of sir.
Sir is a good one.
Sir is the answer. I could
sir
not.
Sir is a good
thank
one.
Thank you to everyone on the text line. I could not think of that. Sir is probably the answer. Someone's, now, we only have the one term. We don't have Uncle
okay,
G.
I'm with you.
Oh, we have,
no, I'm with
we have
you.
Sir.
Someone just said we just used the name that their mama gave them. I think what I'm starting to realize is you guys just don't ever come up with slang. You just wait for us to come up with the slang
and steal
then
it.
You take the slang.
100%.
That's what it sounds like to me. Because if you don't have words for these things, and we do have words for all of these things, you just wait for us to come up with them, and then you see the one that we like, and then you take it. Woke, 10 years ago, did not mean what woke means right now. Woke had a completely different meaning. The wrong person heard woke and now turns it into whatever they want it to be. Karen has a completely different meaning in 2025 than it had in 2015. What did you guys call that person before then? What did you call the white lady in line that feels very entitled? What did you call that person in 2015? You didn't call her a Karen.
We didn't call
her
Karen.
You waited for us to come up with that term.
I think probably there was, I'm trying to think of the term. There was a lot of like, house entitled housewife, that type of energy.
Ooh, yeah. A desperate housewife.
Desperate housewife.
Maybe
yeah.
That was the term. No, mm-hmm. Maybe that was it.
We definitely co-opted Karen. We stole that one.
Some people are saying they use the term boss. That actually sounds like a good one.
Yeah, but boss.
What's
covers,
up, boss?
Boss covers a lot of people. Like if I got called boss by someone, I wouldn't be like, you're
okay,
calling
I'm
me old.
I was just asking. I was very curious. Somebody said yuppie. Oh, someone said we used to call them soccer moms.
That's yep.
You know what? 100%. That might actually be a term that we come up with.
Mm-hmm. Soccer yeah, mom no. was a term.
Someone on the text line says, why would you call someone unk that's not your uncle? I would say that every black person has a person right now in their life that they call unk that's not their uncle. Like I have that person in my life. Every black person right now, if there is somebody like a close friend, a mentor, an OG, somebody in your life, there's somebody that you call unk. Yeah, it's become like a term of endearment, I would just say. That is the term. Someone asked on the text line, so what do we call today's entitled black woman? Cut the racist BS. I guess you guys would just call them a DEI hire. That's what I would imagine that you guys have decided to call that individual. Let me read this for you. Our Thursday night two-leg parlay is brought to you by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be coming soon to America or soon to Missouri with Circa Sports. Very, very simple. I am going to give you DK Metcalf. I'm going to give you DK Metcalf for my anytime touchdown. That's what I like.
Ooh, that's not a bad one. I'm going to keep doing this every single week because I feel like the Thursday night games are bad every single week. I'm going to take the under. I know the Bengals can't score.
That's true.
I think the Steelers on a short week aren't exactly going to light up the scoreboard.
Give me Joe Flacco over on rushing yards. What's that? What's that?
By the way, if you parlay the DK anytime touchdown with my under, it's plus 480 right now on FanDuel.
Someone on the text line says, bro, is that term. I can actually see that. Bro. I'm with you. That's interesting. All right. I was very curious. Very, very curious. Someone says, do you call Fesco unk? I do not call Fesco unk. I like Fesco a lot. I just would not consider Fesco to be my OG. I wouldn't consider Fesco to be my mentor. So, no, I don't call Fesco unk in that way. I don't. That's a very interesting question. No, I like Fesco
I'm
going
to start calling Bink unk. Just out of nowhere. Just see what he does.
Unk. Hey, unk.
Unk, you pop in right now? He's going to look around like, what are you guys talking about?
Tomorrow it's Red Friday. It's Raider Week. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.